We started a new class a few weeks ago on hot button cultural issues that as Christians and as a church we're faced with. And so last week we spent some time discussing kind of an introduction to this first section of sexual sins. And so I want to continue on with that. We think about things of this nature. I think it's important that we put things in a proper context. Now, in 2020, pretty famous author J.K. Rowling was canceled. Some of you probably have seen that in the news. She is definitely not a defender of biblical marriage or even biblical human sexuality. Yet she was canceled because of her views on gender, and that she believed there was in reality two genders. And that's kind of an amazing thing, where you have this very popular before this author who makes a stand for truth, right? That there are two genders, and yet all this anger and hatred came against her. You think about things like that. Think about a few years ago in 2015, a man named Bruce Jenner. Now, some of you remember Bruce Jenner from the 70s. He was an Olympic swimmer who was very, very accomplished in his sport. In April of 2015, came out as transgender. He did an interview in April of 2015 with Diane Sawyer, in which he explained that he had struggled with his gender identity since childhood. In his words, "My brain is much more female than it is male. It is hard for people to understand that, but that's what my soul is. The female side is part of me. That's who I am." A few months later, in July of 2015, Jenner appeared on the cover of Vanity Fair magazine, dressed as a woman and announcing that he had changed his name to Caitlin. In the same month, he received ESPN's prestigious Arthur Ashe Award for courage, largely because of his very public transition from Bruce to Caitlin. In December of 2015, he was featured once again, this time in an extensive article in Time magazine. And so Bruce had altered his name and in an attempt to alter his gender. And, of course, I believe that way early on, there had been a momentum shift in our country away from the biblical view of human sexuality and gender, and all these things that are wrapped up in that concept. But it was almost as though that kind of sparked a wave that we see going on today. It appears in this. Nobody's done
numbers on it,
but it seems to be that wave has just gotten larger, especially when we see now in our schools where there seems to be a real push by some to now push this on our children, to teach it as though it's a reality, that you can be whatever gender you want to be, that you can change those things about yourself, and that's okay. Now, we don't talk about any of this to bash any person. That's not the purpose of this. But as Christians, when we see this wave of change in our culture, what's our response to it? How should we respond? Will it even affect us? You know, sometimes we talk about big issues that really we don't face. And I would have said this probably about this in 2015. I never in my life met a transgender person at that point. I have since. So what seemed like, to me at least, at that time, is so this far-off issue that happened to this very small, minute group of people seems to have grown quite a bit. And so as Christians, how do we respond to that? How does God expect us to respond? Isaiah 5 and verse 20, I just want to note this passage. We've talked about it before, but Isaiah 5 and verse 20, Isaiah the prophet, in speaking to a period of time where there you also have a group of people, Christians, who are living in a very corrupt, not Christians, I'm sorry, Israelites, living in a very corrupt time, and also had allowed that corruption to come into their own lives and are going to suffer for it. Isaiah says, "Woe to those who call evil good and good evil, who put darkness for light and light for darkness, who put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter." What's Isaiah driving at here? He's driving at the idea of moral corruption. When things have become so out of place in the way people think, that we no longer can know right from wrong. Paul speaks about it as having a seared conscience, where that discernment, that ability to discern what's right and wrong, is just off. And where someone who's actually trying to do something morally good is actually condemned for the morally good thing. If you go to, I want to share one more passage as we introduce this, but 1 Corinthians chapter 1. Of course, here again, Paul is writing to a group of Christians who are struggling with facing a culture that is different than their faith. Right? So the culture of that day in Corinth and in many places in the Roman world was not a Christian culture. It was not upholding Christian values. One of the instances we see just here in Corinth that they are struggling with is a sexual relationship between a son and his mother. Appears to be probably a stepmother, but he's in a sexual relationship with his stepmother. So Paul has a lot to condemn about that. But what's even maybe, well, it is worse in this situation is not only is that going on, which that's morally corrupt, but what's going on in the congregation? They're supporting it. What?
They were accepting it.
They were boasting of it. And so Paul will go on later to condemn them. But to set all that up, let's go to chapter 1. And at verse 18, somebody read 18 through 21.
"For the word of the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing, but to us who are being saved, it is the power of God, for it is written, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise, and the cleverness of the clever I will set aside. Where is the wise man? Where is the scribe? Where is the debater of this age? Has not God made foolish the wisdom of the world?" 21:2.
Yes, please.
"For since the wisdom of God, the world through its wisdom did not come to know God, God was well pleased through the foolishness of the message preach to save those who believe."
Now, what's under discussion in this immediate context is the crucifixion of Jesus. But there's a principle here, which is that in regard to wisdom. What is that? What's the paradigm that he's laying out for us?
The wisdom of the world versus God's wisdom.
They're not the same.
Yeah. They're not the same, and also the way it's viewed by one and the other is in stark contrast. Well, the way the world views Christianity is how? It's foolish, right? It's foolish. That's ridiculous. That's strange, it's insane. But in reality, what's going on?
Even in that regard, though, even the way that the world views Christianity, you talk about that we can't know truth. What the world calls Christianity, they've even blurred the line. So forget the, the gender piece of where you're going. What is Christianity, and what people call themselves as a Christian, people call themselves Christians that believe and do and support and advocate for all kinds of things, right? So even the name Christian, or what's God given, has been blurred so much that it's unrecognizable.
Good point. And so you have this stark contrast between the wisdom of God and what man tries to attain to. It's not within man to direct his own path. Who said that?
Jeremiah,
I thought so. It's not within man to direct his own steps, right? What's Jeremiah's point? You have to let God lead you, right?
Yeah.
You have to, because left to our own devices, man will always veer in the wrong direction. We've already looked at it, I won't go back, but in Genesis 6, when man left to his own devices, where did he find himself? Well, he couldn't even think straight. He was evilly thinking all the time. And so it should be no surprise, in other words, this is the point, it should be no surprise to us that there is a contrast between the way God speaks and speaks about things and the way the world does. So there's always going to be that contrast. The world is always going to be drawn toward sin, whereas God is always trying to uphold morality and good and just and truth and those kind of ideas. So it should not be a shock to us in any way that that's going on. And that is what's going on. Again, I'm not trying to be mean to anybody, but just stating the truth, when as a culture we cannot identify, definitely certain elements cannot identify what is a man and a woman, then there's corruption going on in the thinking and the discernment of truth. Right? There's a reality there of things that just is. But when the corruption or when the thinking is corrupt, then we shouldn't expect their truth to be gained that way. And so, next couple of weeks, I wanted to get into these discussions of things like transgenderism, homosexuality, and fornication. And I'm going to go in a backwards order. There's a reason I have for that. But all three of those all delve around this idea of sexuality, human sexuality, gender, those concepts, those realities that God set in place at the very beginning of time. In the book of Romans chapter 1, we're going to come back to that and read it in depth later, but what is one of the reasons, the main reason, I think, that Paul points out that homosexuality is sinful? It is not just any normal sin, but it is a sin what?
It's in the body, which is...
It's abomination.
It's a sin against the created order. Like, man has corrupted creation itself in that. We've sinned against the very nature of things, of the way God set things up. And so it's important for us to dive into the creation order, the way God established things at the very beginning. So if you go to Genesis chapter 2, I just want to note here at the very beginning, of course, chapter 1, verse 26, and then 27 actually says this, but he created them male and female. So he tells us in verse 27 that was what was what God had set in place initially at the beginning. You had two distinct genders. You go to chapter 2 and he gives us a little bit deeper dive into this. more explained look. Somebody read 22 through 25.
And the rib which the Lord God had taken from man made he a woman and brought her unto the man. And Adam said, this is now bone of my bones, flesh of my flesh. She should be called woman because she was taken out of man. Therefore shall a man leave his father and his mother and shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one flesh. And they were both naked, and the man and his wife, and were not ashamed.
Okay, so we mentioned last week, we as human beings live in two realities. When God created, he didn't just create one world, he created two worlds. There is the fleshly world, the physical world, which we live in and which we can sense with our bodies, with our awareness, that's this world. But human beings don't just live here. This is the harder one to see. But it is a spiritual world. It is the world of spirits. And I think it's important to note this. In a spiritual sense, is there male and female?
No.
That doesn't exist in that world. We are spirit beings. We don't have gender. Gender exists where? Here. And it's a part of this created order of things. Just like God set the stars in the sky, set the sun in its place, set the earth in its rotation, why did he do all that? Why did he do all that?
To have order.
To have order, because that was the way it needed to be. He set those things in place for a reason, didn't he? He didn't just do that haphazardly. He didn't just throw down a bunch of things and say, well, you scatter about and go in whatever direction you want to go. But he set all those things in place for a reason. Well, the same is true in every element of God's creation. Why did God do the things the way he did? Well, he did it because it had purpose. So in creating this world, he also set into place that gender is a part of it. And it serves a purpose, doesn't it? Our gender serves a purpose. Let's go back to Genesis 2 here. He gives us a description here of the process of what God did. You know, he put Adam to sleep. He then removed that rib, and from that rib, he formed Eve. Now, why? Why did he not just say, you know what, I'll get another pile of dirt here, and I'll just stack it up. I'll like clay, I'll make another body, and then I'll put Eve's soul in there. Why didn't he just do it that way?
Would that not make everything equal? Because he's been created, has been the same. Adam and her would have been the same. It's created exactly the same way.
Maybe so. But why? Well, doesn't Adam tell us?
Yes.
Adam tells us why. What does he say? Right, there is a connection that exists between a man and a woman because they are fitly joined together. What was the reason he created Eve?
Because Adam was not to be alone.
And so he says, I'll make a helper for him that's fit to him. And so there's this connection in gender between a husband and a wife. There is a coming together. And we noted that in our last class about the two becoming one flesh. And Adam kind of speaks to it here. So number one, why did God create Eve? Well, it was not good. Adam was alone. He needed someone. So the genders meshed together. Why else did he create two genders? For procreation, right? So we could have children and generations to come after. There's a purpose to gender, to human sexuality. Those things, there's a drive, a design behind them for what they're to be. And there's probably many more things we could look at with that. I just wanted to point that out. This is all part of God's design. This is the way he made things. And there's a purpose behind it all. Matthew chapter 19, Jesus will allude to this very passage. Matthew 19, we'll begin at verse 4 in just a minute. Patrick.
Just a quick comment. We shouldn't overlook the fact that he did make two genders. He could have created three.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good.
And he could have made that work, mm-hmm. even with the same purpose. He could have set mm-hmm. laws up. He could have set rules up. He could have made four.
Yeah.
He could have made five. I mean, he really could have.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He could have made one, yeah, and set it up how he wanted to, and it would have worked, but he didn't. So it's not like the only choice he had was to do two, and we have to improve on it. It is very intentional that he stopped at two, because that was his design and his way. Like, sometimes we think, well, there is only two, and it could have only been two, and of course it had to be two, because it makes sense for there to be two. But there could be three or four or five, and he could have done it that way, but he chose not to. It's his wisdom and his design.
Yeah.
You can get back to this idea. Yeah,
there's purpose in all of this.
Yeah, just a couple of things. First, Bruce Jenner was not a swimmer. He was a decathlon, which is track and
field. Oh, I'm sorry.
And he was considered, to me it's part of sarcasm, right? Because he was considered the world's greatest athlete.
Yeah.
He was a man of man. I mean, he was Superman. I mean, to me, he was the Superman.
He was.
As a kid, as a 16-year-old boy. And for him to do what he did was very disheartening.
But he did it for political stuff.
And number two, I mean, to me, people bring up intergender. To me, that's like a person being born with one arm. I mean, it's a birth defect, right? I mean, it's not, in general, you know, you're going to be born a woman or a man. But there are birth defects where
it's
not quite clear.
But that's not yours.
Let's keep going this way.
Yeah.
We'll get there in a little bit.
Okay.
Thank you. Hey, sorry
about the swimmer thing.
I don't know why I got that wrong.
He is a dude.
I said, yeah, so, I was getting confused with Spain.
Michael, who was the great Michael?
Mark Spence.
Yeah, that's who I'm
getting confused.
Sorry, but anyway, he wasn't. Yeah.
But let's go
back to this.
So I want to
grab.
let's stay here. So there is this. This way God established things, and in his wisdom, again, he established them this way for whatever purpose he had, right? But that's the way he established it. And that's the world we live in. We don't. So maybe he could have created four genders or more, right? But that's not
the world
he created. So we live in a particular reality of what does exist. And so we exist in that. So hold on just a second. Let's go to Matthew 19. Let's go to Matthew 19. I just want to add one thought to this. Somebody read 4
through 6, please.
And he answered and said unto them, have you not read that he which made them at the beginning made them male and female? And he said, for this cause shall a man leave his father and mother and shall cleave to his wife, and they twain shall be one flesh. Wherefore they are no more twain, but one flesh. What therefore God hath joined together, let no man put asunder.
Okay, so he relates back to the beginning, and what's he driving at here? This.
What's that?
There's a male and there's a female.
There's two opposite genders
who God.
And
you know the
thing he adds here. He says, what God has joined together, let not man separate. And so it's God who does the joining. It's God who brings the two together.
When he talks about two join, what's he talking about?
Marriage.
Sexuality. He's talking about sexuality and where sex should take place. God brings them together in that particular relationship. Sexuality is reserved for that relationship. We'll talk more about that later on, but that's where that's to exist. We looked at that in Hebrews 13:4, right? Marriage bed is honorable among all, but fornicators God will judge. And so that's where he placed that, Jody.
Well, God created man, but man lacked something. It wasn't good for him to be alone. It's not that God made a mistake when he created man, but he had always had in his mind that man needed to understand that he needed a helpmate. He needed someone who was suitable to him, and in fact, what she came out of him. So it's that bonding of that relationship that completes the man. For him to be a complete being as God intended, he needed a helper. And God created the woman to be that person.
Yeah, and so he brings these two together for those purposes of being companions, also of procreation and establishing a home. And so that was, as you mentioned there, it was part of God's design, and that's the way he intended it. And so let's move to 1 Corinthians chapter 6. And I want to read a section here. Paul is in a discussion about this topic. 1 Corinthians 6, and this is a little lengthier reading. Let's start at verse 12 and we'll read this together. Harry, would you mind reading this?
1 Corinthians 6.
12 through 20.
All things are lawful for me, but all things are not helpful. All things are lawful for me, but I will not be brought under the power of any. Foods for the stomach, and the stomach for foods. But God will destroy both it and them. Now the body is not for sexual immorality, but for the Lord, and the Lord for the body. And God both raised up the Lord and will also raise up us by his power. Do you not know that your bodies are members of Christ? Shall I then take the members of Christ and make them members of a harlot? Certainly not. Or do you not know that he who is joined to a harlot is one body with her? For the two, he says, shall become one flesh. But he who is joined to the Lord is one spirit with him. Flee sexual immorality. Every sin that a man does is outside the body. But he who commits sexual immorality sins against his own body. Or do you not know that your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit, who is in you, whom you have from God, and you are not your own? For you were bought at a price. Therefore, glorify God in your body and in your spirit, which are God's.
Thank you, Harry. So, let's...
That was the New King James Version.
Thank you. He starts out here. He might hit me at home a little bit. He said, all things are lawful and all things are good. And then he talks about food. All right? Any of us ever overeat? He said, sometimes that's not good, right? Sometimes I overeat. But his whole drive in this passage is reflecting on what? The body, right? And how we behave in our physical flesh. Now, I bet you can guess, what was one of the difficulties that the Corinthians had to face in their culture? We mentioned one thing that was going on, but here what's he speaking directly to? Prostitution. Now, what was going on is you had some temples in the city that, as a part of their idolatrous worship, is they had temple prostitutes. Now, think about this, kind of what we've already discussed, what we're driving at here, is that they had become so corrupt in their thinking, they thought the way to serve God was to do what? committed fornication, to abuse the very creation he had set in place. He said, and he's driving at the point here, don't you realize that in committing fornication and prostitution and adultery, all these big topics, that you're actually sinning not just, it's not just like any sin, you're actually sinning against creation itself, against your very body. And I think it's significant, he points out to here, that sexual sin is different. Now, he's not talking just about, we mentioned homosexuality earlier. It's not just homosexuality, it's all sexual sin. All sexual sin is different in what it's doing. And so he says, you can't participate in that, not just because it's immoral, but think about what you're doing in relationship to the way God made you. And so that's why later on, he says, your body's the temple of the Holy Spirit, which lives in you. That puts a different spin on that, doesn't it? The next time that Christian in Corinth is tempted to go into the prostitutes of the temple, maybe he'll think, well, I'm a Christian. I'm carrying the Holy Spirit into this place. Well, hopefully it wakes him up. Hopefully it wakes us up. That there is a specific order that God established in regard to the way sexual behavior was to be carried out. We mentioned earlier, I'll just mention it one more time, Hebrews 13:4. Hebrews writer says that marriage is honorable. Fornicators I will judge, right? Marriage is the outlet for sexual behavior. Within that outlet, sexual behavior is a good thing. It's a beautiful thing. It's God actually allowing and bringing those two people together. Outside of that, it becomes something corrupt, something that destroys rather than to create.
Well, and the verse adds one of that, and that is the bed is not defiled. Marriage is honorable, and the bed is not defiled. The relationship of a man and a woman sexually is sanctified in that marriage.
So we see that this idea of human sexuality and sex is as being one of those things that we need to take seriously. The last passage in this regard is Revelation 21:8. As kids, we quote that, right? Liar, liar, pants on fire, right? But let's read that whole list. Let's go. Somebody read verse 8 for us. Of course, what's under discussion in 21? The final judgment. And so what does he say? Verse 8.
But the fearful and unbelieving and the abominable and murderers and whoremongers and sorcerers and idolaters and all liars shall there be part in the lake which burneth with fire and brimstone, which is the second death.
So he mentions the cowardly, the faithless, the detestable, murderers, and then the older language there, is that the King James or New King James? If you'll, other translations translate that as the sexually immoral, and that's the ideal there. It's fornication. It's sexually immoral activity. Any kind of use of our body sexually in an immoral way is what's being included. And so, as a final reminder, as he approaches the end of this book, into this writing in Revelation, he says to us, the sexually immoral will what?
Second death.
They're going to be punished eternally. And so this is a very serious matter that we're looking at. So I want to move into directly discussing some of these topics in a more specific way. So, like I said before, I want to move in a backwards order of kind of where we are. Here of late, of course, we have seen the discussion of gender more frequently. It's been one of those things that we've seen even in our local area, just recently in Carthage, we had, I don't even know what, doesn't sound like there's good going on, but we had transgender men out with... I'm sorry. I thought it was Carthage.
It's Southern
Pines. Sorry. Okay. You wouldn't say that.
So just to make it real for us, this occurred in Southern Pines, not Carthage.
After Sanford had an ordeal on Halloween.
Why do you tell me that? I didn't even know that.
That's what brought on the Southern Pines, was the Sanford on Halloween.
Okay, so Sanford and Southern Pines have both had drag shows. Now, that in itself is just, that would be immoral, right? And if that was happening off in some corner of society where it was hidden off, that would be bad. But when it's happening in public and it's being advertised, and I know this, as a family activity, family-friendly activity, well, then I've really got to begin to question what's going on. And we have people in our neighborhoods and communities who are attending these things. And some of the things that went on, I won't describe some of what I've heard has went on, but that should at least cause us to stop and say, is this really what we should have going on in our local communities? I have somebody in our family right now who's attending some. He's in high school, but he's attending some college classes, and one of his classes has a transgender teacher. Now, I want to say that, not to pick on the teacher, I won't give you his name, but just the reality of that's not some far-off thing that's happening in some other corner of our world. It's going on here. And so it's something that you and I need to at least discuss and begin to think about.
But in fact, you're talking about this teacher. But should he actually attend that class? I mean, is it wrong?
Well, I don't want to discuss somebody else who's not here.
I mean,
so.
I went to a to Duke to check in, and there's one said, and I refused to. I'm not going to deal with it.
Yeah.
His father had a 3-day growth with a dress and a blouse. And, no, thank you.
Yeah, so.
You have some.
Commanded to love people, right? I mean, you can't directly like turn your nose at somebody or turn your back on somebody and consider to be loving towards them, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, their sin is not any worse than my sin. I mean, it's separating them from God, right? So, I mean, you know, I can't treat my patient I think about it on a professional level. I'm to be a nurse to all my patients. I can't pretend to. I mean, like what they do, and I'm not condoning what they do, that they're coming into the, you know, OR to deliver, and they have a woman sitting beside them that's the birth mother as well as them. Mm-hmm. In fact, we're not allowed to say birth mother anymore. We have to say birth person. They don't breastfeed. They chest feed. I mean, it's all in our society.
Well,
you still have to love the person.
And that one where I want to drive toward is, I want to look at this from a cultural issue, not a specific person issue. Because again, like you do mention, like we have to be careful with what we're condemning, because just as that you might go to Walmart and the transgender person might check you out of the store and pay for it, but also that person could be, you know, a thief. That person could be an adulterer. That person could be any number, a list of things. So I don't think you and I should be going around trying to condemn people in that way, because if we do that, I mean, we have to eventually turn the mirror on us. But so we need to think about those things, Sandy.
And Satan knows it. And he's been going after that for millennia. You know, just talking about this conversation here, you know, should the person attend a class where there's a transgender teacher? When I was growing up, I'll age myself here, people who were divorced, people who were living together, and I didn't grow up in a Christian home, that was frowned upon. And these days, I think one of the greatest dangers to Christians with all of this is to keep our hearts and minds pure. We have had this stuff. So we can control a lot of what goes in, but we live in the world. I mean, God put us in this world. We're exposed to this stuff. You can control some of it. That's why we need to control what we can, because there's still so much we're exposed to in the desensitization. Today, Christians hardly, you wouldn't hear somebody say, well, should they go to that class because that person is living with someone they're not married to?
Yeah.
You know, that you know, and we have become so desensitized in this culture to what, you know, is God's way.
Mm-hmm.
It's sad. And Satan's been working on this for years, because I remember in high school, and I'm sure Patrick remembers it, my first exposure to homosexuality was there was these two girls, and we were at, like, I was a junior or senior driving to school, and when they would leave school, they drove together. The girl would sit over next to her, and it started being talked about that they were, you know, lesbians or together or whatever. That was like the first, and you look at where it's come from that to now. Now it's just like, if they're just lesbians or gay, you know, they hold hands in public, that's not a big deal, because we're hyper-focused on the transgender. We forget, you know, Satan has us so distracted by whatever the, you know, popular thing is of the moment, that we forget all the other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and sin is sin. None of these sins are any worse than the others.
Yeah, and so we're going to drive in that direction. So just to kind of say, because I think it's an important question, is how do we react to people? Now, we're going to talk about this more in depth as we get further along. But remember, what was the condemnation in Romans 1, the end of the chapter? Was those who approve, celebrate, and those who participate. So by me just participating in life with people, am I approving of it? No. But if I'm actually endorsing, now if I go up to that teacher and I say, wow, you're so brave, you're so courageous, you know, good on you, right? That's different than me attending the class and sitting in there and learning, or just being kind to somebody. Because remember, a lot of people out here in the world we're trying to reach, and even that teacher would hopefully be somebody we could reach with the gospel. And so if we cut everybody off, how are we going to penetrate into people's hearts and homes with the gospel? So what does James say? Pure and undefiled religion is to what? To keep oneself unspotted from the world and to visit orphans and widows in their time of need. And so that's the thing, is we're living in a world that's corrupt. And so as we move on and get into this discussion, how do you and I react to these things? And what are we doing in our own homes in this regard?
I got one thing to say, I know the bell already rang, but the psychology side of my brain is twitching. Make sure, you know, I know a lot of people can get down, you know, feel overwhelmed, especially about this topic, but make sure we all keep in mind that it's all in the Bible. We're going to be able to study it. It's been going on for a long time. It's just very exposed now. So please don't get, you know, too down in the world of thinking we can't overcome it when it's been around. We got to learn and study and move past it. Also, I would caution everyone to keep in your mind, especially if somebody were to come up to you wanting to discuss something. Same thing as an alcoholic that knows they struggle with something. Make sure we keep it in our brain that the act of acting on this is simple. People are going to have mental struggles that cause them one thing or the other. When you're studying with somebody and encouraging them to not act on their simple thoughts, it's a huge part of homosexuality, transgenderism, all of it.
Yeah. So we'll keep this going. We'll talk next week. We'll get into this topic and then some of these other ones and kind of wrap it all up in the next couple of weeks. Big stuff, important stuff. Thank you all. We'll be dismissed and rejoin for worship in just a couple of minutes.